You can have a seat. Thanks for coming out in the rain. If you don't know me, my name's Britt. I'm one of the pastors here, and we're going to be studying in the book of 2 Samuel. It's in your Old Testament, just kind of toward the front from the middle, if that makes sense to you. And it's page 218 if you have one of those church Bibles that we give out. You know, you're welcome to steal that from the church. You can borrow them, but if you steal them, that's stealing for a good cause. If you don't have a Bible, take it and just write your name in it so it'll look like it was yours and you just happen to buy one like ours, and then you'll be safe. But anyway, if you're a guest with us today, welcome. If you call Sunridge home for many, many years, you're certainly welcome too. It's so great to see everybody here. And man, you guys, you know, you sing really good. When you come out, you do great. And that actually, like, if the church is singing and engaged, that bumps my sermon up 10 points right away. So, and Lord knows I could use the help. So, you know, join in. So anyway, by way of introduction, I just want to say that, you know, at Sunridge, it's really important to us that people belong here, that you have that sense that this is your church. And so in your program, you have a couple, you have actually a lot of opportunities to connect. We hope that you find your people, you know, whether they're studying what you want to study, doing what you want to do, whether they live near you, they look like you. We don't care, you know, how you connect, just as long as you get connected so that when you come on this campus, it feels like your church, not just a church. And then if you're a guy today, right after this service, we're going to be having a barbecue. We've been smoking pork for like 8-10 hours, I don't know, and it's all going to be in there. We're going to eat a lot of pork, which is good for you. And we're under grace, not the law, so it's legal for us to do so. As I prepared for the message this week, this passage of Scripture came to me in Proverbs 6. And the writer says this: there are 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are detestable to him. So, like, this is the hate list, right? So you ever wonder, like, what really bugs God? Here it is. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among the brothers. And when I was thinking about my sermon this week, which is titled How Dividers Divide, you know, that last part of this passage really stuck out to me. It's like, how did that make the list? Look, it's like the person that causes disunity is right in there with the list of, first of all, things God hates, but it's listed with lying and murder and all manner of wickedness and pride. Why did that make the hate list? Made the hate list because unity is vital. Unity in a family, in an organization, on a team, in a church, any place where human beings are interacting, unity is vital. And disunity is the cause of all manner of pain. I mean, if you think about any time in your past where you had a relationship that was intact, it might have been your marriage, might have been your family, could have been an organization that had great potential to you, could have been a church, and where disunity came, you know how painful that was for you. You know the betrayal that you feel when relationships blow apart. Satan, and I don't know if everyone here believes in Satan. I believe in Satan. Satan, he is the creator of disunity. That is his business. It's his bread and butter, to attack the oneness that exists in human relationships. And much of what he does through the breaking apart of relationships and the peripheral pain that comes from that breakup. That means that as a church, as a people who name the name of Christ, one of the things that we will always have to be on guard for, if Satan is real and Satan has a plan and Satan is a divider, if that's true, then we're going to have to guard our unity. We're going to always have to be alert to his business. Now, I spent from the time I was a peewee through college playing football. And every week we watched game films. And we would watch the game film from our previous game to humiliate one another and find our mistakes. But then we would also watch the game film of the team we were coming up on playing. And we would watch their plays over and over again so that we could become familiar with everything they do. And after a while, after seeing this pattern over and over again, you could, as a player, you could see things happening before you and you're like, I know how this ends. Because you became so familiar with the plays that were their bread and butter. Division is Satan's bread and butter. And today we're going to, chapter 15, it's like a game film. We're going to see how dividers divide. And, you know, you may have watched these game films or you might have seen other video where they highlight the thing that they want you to see. Our highlight is Absalom. We're going to watch him, and we're going to be able to observe what he does in the aftermath of his frustration with his father, King David. And we're going to see what he does to divide the kingdom and to tear it away from David. Remember that we kind of got introduced to Absalom in a big way last week because Absalom is the son of David, and his sister, Tamar, is assaulted by Absalom's half-brother Amnon. And so Absalom is furious about this. He steams and he boils, and his father does nothing to protect Tamar. And so he takes it upon himself. He comes up with this plan to murder his own half-brother. And so he is expelled from Jerusalem. He has to flee for his life as a murderer. And he finds himself in a foreign city, and eventually he's able to come back, but he's still alienated from David, and he is so mad about how that turned out that he's going to do things that he will regret, and so will everybody else in proximity. We're going to see six things today that Absalom does to divide the kingdom from David, and in so observing, we're going to see how dividers divide. And we're going to jump right in to 2 Samuel 15. And we're going to start in verse 1. And the first thing I want to point out is, how do dividers divide? They divide by making themselves look good. And notice Absalom here. In the course of time, Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses and with 50 men to run ahead of him. Can you see this? Absalom is establishing how impressive he is. He's a baller all the way. And he not only has this chariot and horses, which symbolizes his power and his wealth as the king's son, but he has 50 men running in front of him just for the purpose of announcing that he's coming. So this is very impressive. And in verse 2, he would get up early and stand by the side of the road leading to the city gate. So he puts himself in a place of visualness, very prominent, so that people can be impressed by who he is. This is important to the divider because you have to believe in them. Absalom is the guy, you might know him at work, in your neighborhood, where he's always giving you his resume, how awesome he is. It's like, hey, I'm your new neighbor. Hey, by the way, I did this, and I drive the Autobahn, and I have this, and I went to school here, and like, yeah, dude, you don't need to give me your resume every time I see you, right? That's what you're thinking. I just said it out loud, which is not good to do, but he's making himself look good. Secondly, a divider divides by finding common ground with the dissatisfied. He says, whenever anyone came with a complaint to be faced before the king for a decision, Absalom would call out to him, what town are you from? He would answer, your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel. So Absalom becomes a schmoozer, right? He's prominently placed himself at the gate to the city. He's calling out the people that somehow he's able to determine that they have a complaint. I don't know, like at the gate, is there like a complaint line? like I'm torqued at the king, so I get over here. But this is something about a divider that they have an uncanny ability to see the dissatisfaction of people and to leverage this. And, you know, he calls out to them, hey, where are you from? I'm just like you. I'm from Israel. It's like, hey, do you work out? I'm just like you. And in verse 5, also, whenever anyone approached him to bow before him, Absalom would reach out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him. So if you came near him, he would really, really turn on the charm, right? Hug you, kiss you. But somehow Absalom is able to differentiate between people. And he shows extra compassion and extra interest in the people that he can benefit from. Thirdly, dividers divide by making others look bad. Make yourself look good. Find that common ground with those that are dissatisfied, and then make others look bad. Verse 3, Absalom would say to people that came to the gate with a complaint, look, your claims are valid and proper, but there's no representative of the king to hear you. You catch that? Like, you're right. It's like, there's a problem here. But the problem isn't just your problem. The problem is the king, he won't listen to you. When they came with a complaint, Absalom doesn't say, hey, you know, I just want to tell you, like, the king is my father. So let me see if I can work out a solution for us. Let's see if we can find some positive outcome to this. Let's work on some conflict resolution. No. Instead, he just identifies the problem. He's a problem announcer, and he finds company with countless people in the Bible who tried to discredit anything that God was doing. You know, Jesus was discredited by the Pharisees. You know, he eats with sinners, he goes to parties, he makes wine, he keeps company with the wrong people, with tax collectors. All in an effort to discredit him. The Apostle Paul was discredited, you know, like he can't be trusted. Dividers divide by making others look bad while at the same time making themselves look good. Fourthly, dividers divide by presenting themselves as the answer to all the problems. Notice verse 5 or 4, after he had identified that there was this issue, Absalom would add, if only I were appointed judge in the land. Man, if only I were king. Because then everyone who has a complaint or a case could come to me and I would see that he receives justice. Isn't that great? Not great like yippee-ki-yay, but it's so remarkable that the Bible can nail it the way it is. Like, if only I were king, I would do things differently. See, a divider starts by saying, look at me, how awesome I am, and there's a problem, and you and I agree on that problem, because we're just like each other. And you know that if I were there, this is what I would do. And all of that has to be coordinated in perfect timing. Because if it isn't, it's like, they'll be found out. It reminds me, when I was a little kid, I used to spend the summers at my grandpa's farm. And he used to send me down to do things down in the barnyard. And one day he sent me down there to get some eggs. And the problem was, in the chicken coop, all the chickens were sitting on the eggs. So I couldn't get to them. And I came back, I must have been like 5 or 6, and I said, Grandpa, you know, all the chickens are on the eggs. It's like, okay, here's what you do. You go like this and get the chicken's attention. And then when he's looking at that hand, you come in with this hand and grab him by the neck and throw him off. Yeah, I know. Save your emails. This is my grandpa, not me. So I'm absolved from any animal cruelty. So I went down there and tried it. And I did like this. And about the time I was going to go like that, the chicken pecked this hand. And then about the time this one came in, he turned and pecked that one. And I was bleeding on both hands. So I remember, I can still smell the chicken coop. I can remember everything, running back to my grandpa with bleeding hands. Timing is everything. That's all I'm saying. So the divider has to make all of this happen. And then the divider divides number five by being partially right. Because he is right, right? David is unapproachable. It's true. But Absalom is able to take what is partially true, or perhaps even mostly true, and spin it in a way that serves his purpose. And this is what dividers or people who are untruthful do. Like, you can't just tell a giant lie, right? You can't just come up with some crazy thing. It has to be mainly true. When my older girls were growing up in Huntington Beach, they had a little girlfriend, and she used to tell some big stories. And so she was young, so she didn't know this part, that it has to have lots of elements that would be believable in order for you to spin it. But, you know, she was telling us some crazy stuff, so we told her parents, hey, you know, did this happen? And they're like, no, she tells whoppers. That's what they call them, whoppers. So it can't be a whopper. It's got to have some element of truth. And when I say that the divider needs, he's normally partially right, what I'm saying really is rarely are they completely wrong. There's always something. I mean, a broken clock is right twice a day, right? So you have to leverage that rightness in order to spin the unrightness. Remember, Jesus said that false prophets will be disguised as sheep when they're really wolves. So there's something true about them. The Apostle Paul talked about those who masqueraded as apostles of Christ. So there's a deception using the truth. In verse 6, Absalom behaved in this way toward all the Israelites who came to the king asking for justice. And so he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So David's own son has reached such a level of frustration that he would rip apart his family in order to get what he wants. You know what? Like, I bag on Absalom, but it's like we're all kind of like that. We want what we want. And we'll use people and the truth and situations in order to get what we want. Those people that become followers of Absalom, they're frustrated too. They had some issue that the king would not help them with. But rather than turning that into something positive and finding a solution, Absalom blows the thing apart, because the main thing that he wanted was to steal the hearts of the men and women of Israel. Lastly, the divider divides by consolidating his power. So all these things come together, and at the end, he makes his move. In verse 7, it says, at the end of 4 years, and there's debate. Some of your Bibles may say 40 years. We don't have time to deal with that, but I'm a four-year guy for many reasons. It's a great thing to study. Absalom said to the king, after 4 years, let me go to Hebron and fulfill a vow I made to the Lord while your servant was living in Geshur of Aram. That is, when I was banished. I made this vow, if the Lord takes me back to Jerusalem, I will worship the Lord in Hebron. So it really helps when you're consolidating power if you can find a spiritual reason why you're doing what you're doing. But really, you should see through the baloney here. What Absalom is doing is he's getting himself out of the city of Jerusalem, and he's going down south and west to Hebron, which is his native area. And he has relationships there. He's out of the view of the king. He's with the people that will have some vulnerability to his treason. And he will be able to work it out of the view and out of the knowledge of David. And this is what he does. He recruits others to this treason. And one of them, we will see even in coming chapters, his name is Ahithophel. And he was an advisor both to David, and he will be an advisor to Absalom as he overturns the kingdom. And he's vulnerable because he is the grandfather of Bathsheba. Remember that story? So he's probably had some issue with King David all along. And he jumps at the opportunity as well. And in verse 12, we're told that the conspiracy gained strength, and Absalom's following kept on increasing. So the divider divides by looking good, being impressive, by establishing common ground with those that are dissatisfied, by making others look bad, by having all the answers, by being mainly right about what they're saying, and consolidating their power ultimately. So what's the result of Absalom's work? Verse 13, a messenger comes and tells David, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. It's happening. Then David said to all his officials who were with him in Jerusalem, come, we must flee, or none of us will escape from Absalom. So David is unseated. He's dethroned. And he stops outside the city in the following verses here. And I just want to like highlight a couple of things. And in verse 18, all of his men march past him, the dethroned king. And in verse 23, as they're traveling toward the Jordan Valley, the whole countryside wept aloud as the people passed by. And in verse 30, David continues up the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went. His head was covered, and he was barefoot. These are all symbolic of his mourning and his banishment and his humiliation. And all the people with him covered their heads, too, and were weeping as they went up. Can you imagine? Imagine, like, David is not just dethroned. He's dethroned by his son, for whom we will see he has great compassion, but there's some brokenness there that they can't break through. But his son turns the people that were so loyal to him against him. I know that in a room like this, there are people that you've experienced that in some way or another. Like you've gone through the ripping apart of a relationship. It might have been in your marriage, and there was a divider involved who flattered your spouse and appeared impressive and worked it and ultimately consolidated that power over that person and stole them from you. Some of you have been a part of teams or organizations that had great potential. You might have owned a business and a divider joined it. Maybe it was your partner. And they did the same thing to you, so that the business that you ground out and you started and you sacrificed, you had to walk away from your business. Some of you have been a part of any type of an organization, a church, in which disunity comes. And that you know the pain for everybody that's involved. When I was in college, they would cut people on the football team in the early part of the summer. We would get there early before the first game, and we'd practice three times a day. It was all football, all day, all the time. And some people wouldn't make it, so they would call them in and dismiss them. Some people would see they're not going to make it and just leave. And, you know, they never did it in broad daylight. It was always like a private meeting, and then that person would just kind of like disappear. You'd come back from breakfast and your roommate would be moved out. Because that, like, I mean, that's the feeling I get that David is going through. It's like there's humiliation in it for him. And all the complications that this includes family. Maybe your family has gone through something like that, where maybe it's not in proximity in your immediate family, but there's a dynamic in your family because of dysfunction, because you have a divider in the family that processes their frustration in an unhealthy way. It's remarkable in the rest of the chapter how David is so concerned about those that are being displaced by this event. There's Ittai, who is new to the area and the palace, and he follows David, and David says, look, this is not your battle, you go back. There are two priests, Zadok and Abiathar, and they bring the ark with David and follow him. They cast their lot with him, and he says, hey, this is not your battle. Go back, take the ark back to the city. If God is for me, he will arrive without, with or without the ark. And then there's Hushai, who is also an advisor, and David sends him back as well, but with a little job to do, which is to frustrate the counselor to Absalom. And we're going to look at that next week. But in the end, isn't it remarkable that Absalom is so successful at this? Are you kind of surprised by it? That even he executes well, even though he does that, it's like all these people were so loyal to David and his leadership. They remember, they came out and sang his praises after he was anointed king. They said, Saul has slayed his thousands and David his 10,000. Which wasn't true. It was really an exaggeration. But like, it's just the feeling. And yet somehow Absalom is able to break that apart and to tear it down. Proverbs talks about this. Proverbs 16:28, a perverse man can stir up dissension and a gossip can separate close friends. So it is possible to break marriages and churches and organizations and other relationships and families apart, because this is Satan's bread and butter. He doesn't want people to be connected. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. And next week we'll look at the aftermath of this. But in wrapping up, I want to do two things. I want to ask a question, and then I want to make two observations for us, bring it down to where we live. The first is a question. What if it's happened to me? What if a divider has been in your life? What'd I do, Britt? I mean, David doesn't fight back here. How do you know what to do, if to do anything? And remarkably, David has left us a psalm, Psalm 3, that was written at this time. So David, as a musician, as a poet, as a contemplative person, he turns his thoughts and records them, probably to music. And this is what he writes when he's fleeing from Absalom in Psalm 3. But you are a shield around me, O Lord. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head, and to the Lord I will cry aloud. David turns his focus, his source of comfort, and his source of confidence to the Lord. No, it's church, right? I mean, isn't that always the answer? But it's the right answer. I don't know what kind of tension you've gone through, or betrayal, or how your relationships have gotten divided. You might be thinking of a relationship you don't have now today that you did. I don't know. Maybe you're thinking about someone's relationship that you divided. But in the end, we have to place our confidence and our comfort in the Lord. That there's nothing that happens that he's not aware of. I mean, notice David says, you're my shield around me. The place where I hurt, God, I turn to you to protect me. No other human being. Maybe it's not going to be resolved, but I trust you. And you lift up my head. But she's saying, in spite of the humiliation that I feel, in spite of the loss, in spite of my lostness and uncertainty about what is next in my relational circle, in my family, in my team, in my church, I turn to you. And what he says here is like, I lift up my head. It's like, not in a false sense of pride, but like, I lift up my head because I can see you, and my confidence and my comfort is in you, and I'm not so low that I can't look up because of you, Lord. Do you have that relationship with God? So that's my question. Now I have two thoughts to apply for us. First of all, it's kind of a no-brainer when we talk about how dividers divide. Don't be a divider. Is that easy? Don't be a divider. You know, did Absalom have other options? Yes. Of course he did. And when we're in a position of frustration, or you just think you can't work this next thing out, maybe you can. We think we can't, but maybe we can. I love what the Apostle Paul wrote to the believers at Ephesus. He writes to this church, and he says in Ephesians 4:3, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Make every effort. What I see in that is there's work, and that there's not just like casual work, that when I feel the unity fraying, I have to make every effort to keep that unity. Cindy and I have some dear, dear friends that we've been working with that are struggling in their marriage. They've been married longer than us, I think, close to it, but a long time. And they're in a low point. And so they're in counseling. I mean, getting them there was even hard, but like from both of them, what we hear is like just despair. There's too much water under the bridge. We can't go another step. And yet what we've, in a non-judgmental way as much as possible, I can't say that it didn't get interpreted as judgmental at times or like pressure that they cannot bear, but like we just kept saying, you know, when you look back, if you're divorced, like you want to look back and go, I did everything I could to hold this thing together. And so that if you end up there, you don't want to look back with regrets. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit. Don't be a divider. The second application is the other side of it. Don't be fooled by a divider. Again, Jesus said, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. In other words, don't be fooled. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. There's telling you at stake, but it's baloney. Don't be fooled by the divider. Protect the oneness that you have in your marriage, in your church, in your family. It is one of the most precious trusts that we have. You know, at our 25th anniversary, I gave a very profound speech. And the standout point of all was extremely profound. Some of you may remember, keep the main thing the main thing. Bam. I just think of these things. I don't know what to say, folks. But that's the key. That's the key to oneness, because we keep, if it's in your relationship, if it's in your church, if it's on your team, it's like we keep wanting to make everything in the middle, like everything's extremely important. Everything is not extremely important. There are some things that are very important, but it isn't everything. So don't be fooled by a divider. Keep the main thing the main thing. It's surprising to me how the people lined up with Absalom. But we shouldn't be surprised by it, because dividers are really good at dividing. It's a play that Satan has been running over and over again for centuries, and it works. Don't be fooled by it. And don't be the person that's causing it. May that be true of us, in your circle of friends, and true of the people that call Sunridge home. May we be uniters, not dividers. Pray with me, please. God, we are, we're scared, we're hurt at times because we've been victimized by dividers, and the opportunities are endless. Some of us have been the cause of division. Would you let your grace pour over us? Let it make us broken and recommitted to unifying people. And may it make us wary of those who don't have the same commitment. In Jesus' name, amen.